later on in the show. We'll change gear slightly at the moment to talk to Ian Packham. Ian's a scientist, adventurer and writer. In 2013, he was runner-up in the National Geographic Traveller UK's writing competition, and he's author of Encircle Africa, Around Africa by Public Transport. I asked him what I thought was the most obvious question, why anyone would set themselves the challenge of journeying 25,000 miles through 31 nations using only public transport.
It may be the most obvious question, but there is no obvious answer to it. Aside from the fact of just wanting to go out and do some travelling after being in education for so long, I just looked at Africa on a map and it seemed like this intriguing place, and I knew so little about it. I wanted to go and sort of investigate for myself and see if all this bad stuff we hear about it really on the news is the truth of what Africa is about.
And is it?
No, not at all. Africa is such a vibrant and positive place when you're there on the ground. Everyone is thankful that they're, you know, kind of alive that day and have money for that day and their kids are in school. And it's such a different perspective to what you see of this misery, which is basically all you see of Africa on the news.
I can understand why you might want to go to Africa, but why set yourself those rules that you can only go by public transport around that continent? Because, I mean, it's enormous.
It is. And one of the things about Africa is a lot of the big cities and historical places are situated on the coast. So this idea of following the coast all the way around started to develop. And really the public transport bit of it came about simply because I don't really like driving. There's no way I could cycle that distance in the year I had. And so it just seemed like an obvious way of getting about.
So how did you define public transport? What rules did you set yourself?
So public transport is a bit different in Africa. There's no sort of integrated public transport systems, no numbers on buses and things like that. So it's really men who own a vehicle, make their living driving a particular destination. So they act as a bus, and they tend to be called bush taxis, but it does depend where you are in the continent. And they just do that every day. And so it goes into my definition of public transport, but it's not public transport as we might imagine it.
It's very intrepid. Had you ever done anything like this before?
No, not really. I sort of came to travel a bit late in life. I'd been on holidays, but the furthest I've ever been was sort of Malaysia for 3 weeks. So to go on something like this for 13 months was a big change for me and a big challenge as well.
And you've written about it in the book. How did you find writing about the experience as opposed to living it? Obviously it felt different, but how?
It's quite hard to describe putting your thoughts on paper. I had notes that I took every day through the trip. But going from reading the experiences and remembering these events that I'd experienced to having to look at it as a third person to write it down and to make a sensible narrative account that would entertain people and keep people reading on through was quite a difficult thing.
So you were making notes all the way through. So it was always your plan to write it as a book?
No, not at all. I've just done that when I've been on holiday. First holiday when I was five, we went to Denmark and we came back and my mum bought us some scrapbooks and we filled out day one, went to Legoland, that sort of thing. And every time I've been abroad, I've kept a diary.
So you must have learnt a lot about writing by writing this book, as you say, about pacing it and keeping the reader's attention.
I learnt a huge amount. As somebody who had always enjoyed writing at school, and I'd written a few articles and things for magazines, but obviously a book is a totally different enterprise.
Now, be honest, were you tempted to make things up? Is there anything that's made up in there?
No, not at all. In fact, there are some amazing stories that aren't in the book because they didn't make sense in the narrative. I sort of thought to myself when I was writing it, and indeed doing it, because I was writing a blog as I went along, as soon as I stop telling the truth, then the whole enterprise becomes pointless, really. So even difficult things I was putting down on paper.
Hard to capture a continent like Africa on paper, really, isn't it? The sights and sounds and smells.
It's very difficult because Africa is about the sights and sounds and smells. It's not about going to museums and stuff like that. It's about being on the street, buying your meal off a Bunsen burner almost off the street, buying your fruit off a woman who's carrying it on her head. It's about those interactions rather than any massive sights.
And were you mentally writing it as you went along? Were you thinking, oh, this will be good?
The one good thing about going by public transport is it gives you a lot of time to think. So I'd be sitting on there for maybe 3 or 4 hours at a time and whole paragraphs would be forming in my head. And then when I got to a stop and I could write down, paragraph would just pour out of my head straight onto paper.
And are you a fan of travelogues generally?
I am. I read a lot of them and I've always been a fan of Michael Palin too. It's somebody I grew up with watching his programmes as he went around the world.
What makes a good travel book for you?
I think it is the interaction with the locals. It's all very well going around and showing the Taj Mahal or whatever. That's more a holiday program, whereas a true sort of travelogue is about getting in there, interacting. By traveling by public transport, I had to interact. And it's just being as local as you can be while you're there, if I can put it in that respect.
And you weren't without incident, were you? I mean, you fought off thieves in Senegal, you were tear gassed in a museum, you were refused entry into the Democratic Republic of Congo, and mistaken for an undercover UN official during Liberia's presidential election. It's a lot to cram in and make sense of.
It's sad in a way that the things that sell the book are the sort of negative stories in a way, whereas I'm always trying to portray Africa as this positive place, and I have totally changed my perspective of the continent since being there.
What's your favourite country? You moved around. We're talking about Africa here as though it's one homogenous whole, and obviously it's made up of all these different countries with different personalities almost. What was your favourite country?
So there are 54 countries, I think, in Africa, and I went through 31 of them over 13 months, so I was moving pretty quickly. My favourite region certainly was West Africa, the bit I sort of feared the most. You know, the bits on the news now about Ebola, Sierra Leone, Liberia, Nigeria, those countries and the people in those countries just looked after me so well and wanted to give me this good impression of their country, which is such a surprise.
It's a shame that many of these people won't actually read the book.
It was, and it was, you know, I met these great people, and you're trying to, you know, give contact details, but they don't have email, they don't have phones that connect to the international system. So there are these people I met, and who were really kind to me, and I had real fun being with them, who I will never, you know, realistically speak to again.
Has it inspired you to write more?
Absolutely. What exactly, I'm not sure. I've always got ideas going around in my head. And as I say, I do write some articles, basically mainly travel articles for magazines and websites. I think I'd be disappointed if I didn't write another sort of book-length travelogue at some point in my future.
And what's been the reaction to this one?
It's been really positive, which is great for somebody with no sort of history in writing, to get strangers telling you how much they've enjoyed reading it or listening to me when I give talks about it, then that's such a real buzz, and I'm really pleased about that.
And did you discover, because often when people write, they discover actually hidden depths within themselves, or, you know, that they can be more poetic or more prosaic than they thought. Did you discover things about yourself just by writing it and reflecting on it?
I'm definitely a perfectionist, so I wanted every sentence to sound right, and that could be troubling when you know in the back of your mind you need to get this book out at some point, and you're sitting there for 2 days over this one sentence because it doesn't fit. Or, as I said, cutting out those stories that are brilliant stories but don't make sense to the narrative.
And I suppose reflecting that this is a book of your experience, it's one record of it, but actually your mental record is a different record as well, and the two can coexist.
And it'll be completely different. Every time I go back to the notebooks and every time I think about it, the ideas change. And, you know, if I were to think about it again in 10 or 20 years' time, it would be different again. And in fact, if I did the trip again, it would be completely different, because so much about the journey was those day-to-day interactions that were so spontaneous, they weren't planned, that it would be impossible to repeat them.
What would you think about other ways of recording it, perhaps with a voice recorder? I mean, it could make a brilliant radio series.
Yeah, and that's something I'm sort of looking into for my next trips. It's just having that sound or even the vision just adds that little extra something. But that's not to take away from books per se. I think books are an incredibly important part of our culture. And you can put so much across in writing, which maybe you can't. As soon as you put an image up, say, on the screen, then you've lost someone's imagination of what they're imagining you've written.
That was Ian Packham there. Interesting.